All right, as promised, this is going to be a little bit of U of A, or actually a lot of U of A, and a little bit of a media podcast, because I believe one of the emerging stars of media in the state of Arizona is sitting across from me in Justin Spears. I met Justin a couple of years ago. Jordan Hamm had told me about Justin. I didn't hold that over Jordan's head or Justin either. The fact that those two knew one another wasn't like a big red flag, although I probably could have been. And as I saw Justin go about his business and just dive into the workload, it's like this dude has become must read. It's one of those deals. Like without Justin, I guess with Hanson, I would still be a daily star, daily reader. But Justin Spears, after the big, long, windy introduction, is with us for a couple of minutes. Where did the love of media come from for you?
When I realized that I couldn't play college football as a 5'8" center, and that's a 5'8" on a good day. So when I realized football is not in my future, how can I be around it? How can I still have a role in the game? How could I tell incredible stories? Well, let me get into the media and cover football. So that's where the love for it started. You know, I had always been a sports media consumer. I had read the Arizona Daily Star as a little kid. And now that I'm able to, you know, work alongside some of the guys that I've read in my hometown, it's honestly such a privilege. I've always loved sports media, but I think really what pushed me down this avenue was when I realized I'm very vertically challenged, not the tallest guy in the world. So I couldn't play football the next level. So that's why I'm here.
Where was high school?
Cienega High School
in Mountain Vale. You did play football?
I did.
Were you good?
I wasn't terrible. Yeah. But I was the center. Yep. I was the center and long snapper for Cienega High School. I played 3 years on the varsity team. My junior year, we were able to go to the state championship. Still the only Cienega team to make it all the way to the state championship. Now, that being said, we got just absolutely killed by Scottsdale Chaparral, who had Charlie Ragle as their head coach. ASU head coach right now, Kenny Dillingham, was like a graduate assistant, even if they even had those at the high school level. And that Chaparral team was just absolutely loaded. But my time at Cienega was great. I love playing for Coach Hassey, one of the greatest coaches in Southern Arizona history. And I wouldn't trade playing football for the world. That brotherhood, the memories created, it's something I'm going to carry for the rest of my life.
I joke with Ragle that, you know, when you guys built apartments across the street from Chaparral, those were really dorm rooms. And he's like, Oh, Brad.
They were so loaded.
They were. That was like Devontae and Connor Burke and that crew. Yeah.
Yep.
That was a squad. So you're in high school, you're at Cienega, you're the hometown kid, and you were already consuming media. You figured out, okay, I'm vertically challenged. The chances of me making it, I have to transition into something. So was it a teacher? Who was it that pushed the button inside of you? Is like, you should go pursue this.
My brother, actually. There was one day he was going to take me to school. It was early high school or late middle school. I forget what it was. But he pointed out Scott Van Pelt and pointed out some other pundits on ESPN and said, wouldn't it be so cool to be like those guys and talk about sports, write about sports, and get paid to do it? And I said, damn, you're on the money there. I need to, you know, start looking into this avenue if football doesn't work out. And then, you know, once I got to about 15 years old, and I'm like, okay, all the guys that I've grown up with are all significantly taller than me. I need to figure out what I want to do with my life post high school, because I'm not going to be playing at the collegiate level. And when we weren't playing football, I became a play-by-play broadcaster for the Cienega basketball team and started getting my reps in there. But I, you know, realized at the end of my high school career that I didn't want to be a play-by-play broadcaster. That takes a special skill to be one of those guys. I don't have that skill. So I wanted to get more into the radio podcasting realm. And then, you know, I got some piece of advice from Damien Alameda, actually, down here in Tucson. He works for 13 News. And one of the, you know, things that he told me was, one, love what you do. If you love what you do, you don't have to work a single day in your life. And one thing that's going to take you far in this industry is if you know how to write. If you learn how to write, that is the ultimate cheat code for the rest of your career. And so I really dedicated the early years of my time at the University of Arizona when I went to the journalism school. And I just wanted to learn how to write. And then the more I wrote, the more I just fell in love with it and started writing for the Daily Wildcat, covering the University of Arizona football and basketball programs. And then my love for writing just kept growing, and I was able to put together some really nice stories. And I love feature writing, and it became a passion of mine. And then on top of that, you know, I got to do radio and podcast and get those reps up, the one avenue that I really wanted to pursue when I became a journalist. And so I married those two together. And fortunately for me, it was able to get me some gigs down in my hometown, writing for the Arizona Daily Star and hosting a radio show on ESPN Tucson.
Yeah. You know, but if you have the play-by-play tapes from Cienega, pull them out sometime for your kids.
Okay.
It's like the first radio show I ever did was on Christmas Day. The only person who called me was my best friend, and it was like 19. And they said, yeah, sure, you can have an hour on Christmas Day. And I was dreadful. And I'm just flailing and drowning. And he called in, and we talked about dumb stuff for like 15 minutes. So, yeah, it's one of those fun things. So you did the play-by-play. You figured it out. In high school, were you a good writer already then? Or did you have some teachers that are like, you better pick up the pace?
Yeah, I was a decent writer. I had, you know, some teachers that came up to me, and they said, you're a very colorful writer. You're really good at providing detail, providing just in-depth stuff. We just need to figure it out. We need to clean it up and make it so it's very professional. So in high school, I had some great English teachers that helped me write. And as part of my senior capstone project, we had this thing, it was called SEP, Senior Exit Project. And we had to shadow someone that, you know, we wanted to be when we, you know, got older and got into the career force. And that's where I shadowed Damien.
Okay. That's cool.
And as part of the senior exit project, we had to write a 10-page paper about, you know, a critical issue. And sure enough, I argued why student athletes should get paid. So we talk about NIL and all that. I was arguing for it back in 2012. And as part of the project, we had to write the 10-page paper without using the words B-E, and R, A-R-E. Writing 10 pages without using those two words, it is so challenging, but it made you think. It got really creative. And that teacher, Mr. Alexander, for my senior exit project, the way he challenged me, it was one of the hardest writing projects I've ever done. And I'm very thankful for it, because he really had an influence on me becoming a better writer.
I had a speech teacher in high school who said, you cannot use or you know. Or you know. Actually,
can't do it.
Yeah, right. And I actually used that later. Marshall Falk was an intern of mine in San Diego. And I gave him the newspaper, the sports page, Union Tribune, and said, go to the bathroom and just look in the mirror and read it. He's like, why? Because there's no ummas and you knows in it. Let's get those out. Right. So that's cool. That's cool. So radio and podcasting, you've given the backstory on the writing part, but the radio podcasting side, who poured into you on that?
Growing up, my late father, Gerald Spears, who passed away 5 years ago, him and I, whenever we would drive around Tucson, we would listen to sports talk radio. He never really listened to music. We listened to music as a family together. Mm-hmm. Right now was at a time where, you know, you were forced to listen to the music that your parents played in the car. So, you know, we would listen to country music or some classic rock, but whenever it was just the dudes, just me and my father or my brother, we would listen to talk radio. We listened to Jim Rome. We listened to Mike and Mike in the morning. I mean, we would change the channels, listen to different radio shows. And it was just always so entertaining to me. And that's, you know, how my dad and I bonded, you know, when we were sitting in the car listening to sports talk radio. And, you know, I followed some mentors. Like, I always listened to Mike and Mike. Later on, you know, as I got a little bit older, Dan Le Batard out in Miami had an influence on me because he was a writer for the Miami Herald. And then he became a radio host. So I kind of wanted to follow a similar path as Dan Le Batard. So following my peers or my mentors, I should say, the people that I looked up to, pushed me down that path. But I always think about those memories I have with my dad, and some of the best ones I have are sitting in his Toyota Tacoma listening to sports talk radio or play-by-play broadcast.
Cool. school. Justin Spears is with us. He is a big voice in Tucson, actually statewide. If you want to know what's going on with U of A, you have to read what he does. And I don't mean to slight, like Pasco I've read forever and he's great. And Lev I've read forever. So I'm not slighting anybody off the top on this. People just relax. Ryan Finley, when he was there, Ryan was just a kid out in San Diego. He did a great job. Now he's back out there. Who gave you your break to the Daily Star?
Ryan Finley, the guy that you just mentioned. And when I was a student media member, when I was working for the Daily Wildcat and UATV and Camp Student Radio and doing all these other projects, I did everything I wanted. Anything I could do, I did. Whether it was TV, print, radio, I just wanted to do anything. And he saw my work ethic and my willingness to do anything. And you know what? Believe it or not, your fashion can lead you to some jobs. I was always the guy who wore suits. I always had, you know, neatly pressed dress shirts that were button downs. I need to go back to those old days. I'm looking like a slob compared to the younger version of Justin Spears. But, you know, Ryan would always pay attention to how I dressed and how I presented myself. And even something as simple as interviewing people for, you know, the next editor in chief for the Daily Wildcat, I was wearing a 3-piece suit and he saw that. And I was like, this guy means business. So when a job opened up at the Arizona Daily Star to be a sports producer, I was one of the first people he contacted because he was familiar with my work. And he also saw how I presented myself. And I applied for the job. I was, you know, fortunate enough to get it right out of college, which is a rarity in today's day and age in journalism. It's so hard to get a job. It's just so rare when it's in your hometown for a place like the Arizona Daily Star. So he gave me my first break and said, you know, you're going to be the new blood. You're going to focus on digital journalism and handle, you know, videos, podcasts, handle all of our social media accounts. You're also going to write to, you're going to be a jack of all trades. And I came in, did anything I could possibly do, had some great stories. And Ryan worked with me. He's always been a great mentor, even to this day. I have great bosses. I really do. But Ryan, to me, as the guy who gave me my first break, the guy who became a really good friend, the best boss I ever had is one Mr. Ryan Finley. And I'm just indebted to that guy because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him giving me that phone call saying, hey, I think you should apply for this job.
That's cool. When you talk about wearing the suit, so this is back, I'll just throw myself in here for a minute because I totally relate to you. I'm nodding my head. The LA Times ranked us when we started 690. Rome, Jimmy was there with all of us. We all launched the 690 brand together. Ryan Finley was probably just a kid, but I got named best dressed radio host, which was a swipe, which I was fine with because I always wore a suit. You know, it's one of those things. You're going to make yourself, nobody can see what you're doing. Well, guess what? I'm pretty professional about this. So when you just said that, it was like, that's cool. Somebody else who may have taken a little bit of abuse over wearing a suit. As you went through it, was there pressure in that you went to the U of A to get it right in your hometown? You always want to get it right. But is there any extra pressure now or then that you felt like hometown kid, I can't screw up?
A lot more pressure now just because I am the Arizona football beat writer and I'm also hosting a radio show in the morning too. You know, a lot of people would kill for my opportunity and the chances that I've received. So I'm like, I can't fudge this. I gotta be able to thrive, tell great stories, be a great human being first and foremost. You know, the work is always going to be great. So many people do a lot of great work in this town, but you know, how are you going to stand out? And I really wanted to immerse myself in the community, get out, talk to the people. There's a lot of great people in Tucson, Arizona. And I think what has really set me up for this chapter in my time at the Arizona Daily Star, you know, changing roles in the last year and a half, is the connections that I made at the high school level, meeting all the different high school football coaches in the community. You know, like when I'm talking about you know, Jordan Morgan going to the Green Bay Packers. You know, I can, you know, reach out to, you know, some of his former coaches, or Trent Borgay, same deal, or any of the guys that played at South Point, like Bijan Robinson, you know, talking to Dennis Binet and talking to all the other coaches, Carla Garrett, the strength and conditioning coach at South Point, just all the people that I've met. I have developed a pretty thick, you know, Rolodex, and it's all because of covering high school sports. And you develop a reputation in the community, and people are more willing to talk to you. People are more willing to help you out and even share information, share stories with what they hear. You know, these high school football coaches, they hear about stuff that the University of Arizona is doing, and then they go out and they tell me. You know, I found out about, you know, preseason training camp dates because, you know, Brent Brennan met with a bunch of high school football coaches, and a few of them came out to me and said, "Hey, Justin, this is when they're starting camp." That information I got was because of the relationship. So I've developed a lot of great relationships over the time. But as far as, like, you know, the pressure, I was having so much fun as a young guy coming out of college. I mean, I'm still young, but like coming out of college, I just thought it was so cool that, like, I'm living on my own. I'm doing what I went to college for, and I'm making an honest living. Am I making $1 million? No, but I'm providing for myself. I'm paying my bills, and I'm doing what I love. I can work all the hours in the world, and it's not going to matter to me. But right now, I certainly feel the pressure because, you know, there's only so many, you know, college football beat writers in the country right now. And I want to make sure that I'm doing things right. I'm providing the information for the public while also maintaining a healthy relationship with the Arizona football staff. And sometimes, you know, you could piss off some people along the way.
Well, I was going to ask you, how did you handle Kevin Sumlin? Like, how can you go in and sit on the radio and look into talk into a microphone and talk about the Kevin Sumlin era without being critical? You know what I mean?
Oh, you have to.
Yeah, you just have to bring in the sledgehammer. Any of this nonsense about everything's great, like, I get that up here with Forks Up, or if I question anything with U of A during Sumlin, oh, you just hate the U of A. I don't care. I didn't go there. I didn't go to ASU. I don't care. And so I'm just curious how in Tucson, which the U of A is the deal, do you go about saying, we got to just hammer away today?
Yeah, you just got to tell what is the story. And, you know, I had a situation with Jed Fish last year with the whole Jaden Delora situation. And when it, you know, news came out that Jaden Delora was going to be talking at Pac-12 Media Day, you know, when I wrote the story about, hey, Arizona's quarterback who's accused of sexual assault from high school, he's going to take the stage and he's going to address it and face the music. And then, you know, in my story, I put some of the details from the civil case, and Jed Fish didn't like that because it made his quarterback look bad. And Jed, after Pac-12 Media Day, you know, came up to me and we had a nice conversation in the hallway at Zouk Nightclub in Las Vegas. And, you know, he said something along the lines of, you know, why are all the details in your story? Like, I just don't understand that. Like, people already know about Jaden and his case. Like, why are you giving the play-by-play? And I had to explain to him, like, well, this is the first time that we've written about it in about 3 months. And Jaden is talking right now. And so I had to explain to Jed, like, I'm sorry, I don't want to do this, but I kind of have to. This is a big deal, and this is why I'm explaining it this way. And Jed understood from that point forward, and, you know, we never had any problems after that. But again, in my job as the beat writer, you know, every now and again, you're going to have to write about something like that, and something that you don't want to write about. Like, I grew up going to Arizona football games. I grew up going to Arizona Stadium. Like, I want to tell all the great stories that's going on with the Arizona football program. But as a beat writer, all the positive stories, you have to tell all the negative ones too. So that's been, I wouldn't say challenging, but it's definitely been, you know, something that I've had to experience in my time as a beat writer. And you're always going to have to piss somebody off. And hey, if you piss somebody off from time to time, maybe you're doing your job right.
No, if you don't sit there and have opinions, because everything's not going to be great, it doesn't mean that you're out there headhunting saying, hey, today I got to go rip somebody. But
yeah,
I just don't buy into that. It's kind of like, from a distance, how, and I was there at Media Day. I think I saw you there at Media Day. Jordy probably put you on when Delora talked. And I don't know, did Jed Fish completely miss on who the best quarterback was? Probably did in hindsight, and then had to make a reversal on it. And it led to a stud quarterback up here saying, I think I'm going to go to Washington. So it, there's this whole trickle down effect that if you don't put that story out there, coaches assume that everybody knows, or they just don't want anything put out that could be viewed as controversial. And it's, you're just doing your job. So
yeah,
just curious about that. If you do something on U of A football versus U of A basketball, are the metrics different or do you not care?
Metrics are a little bit different. U of A basketball is king down here in Tucson.
And football's okay with that?
I think so.
But you're never hearing that?
But, you know, with the year that they had last year, with, you know, going 10-3, winning the Alamo Bowl, right, people started to really care about Arizona football. So the metrics improved, but man, I could put out a breaking story about Jake Amanu or Tetero McMillan, and the story about Arizona renewing its rivalry with UCLA is going to be the top story on our website. That's just the way it is. People in Tucson, people who follow Tucson sports, the University of Arizona, they're cuckoo for basketball, as you know.
Yeah. No, and they already had tickets on sale today, which I thought was funny. And it's great. I'm glad that they are playing. So have you ever thought about bailing out on the job? Did you ever have the dark day where you're like, I can't do this? Because everybody that's been in this business has had a dark day. Curious if you have, or if you're the one that hasn't.
Yeah, I would say probably towards the end of last year, when, you know, Arizona was on the winning streak and work just piled up. And I got really bogged down. It was the dog days, but like, you know, we're in the middle of the season. It's late. I've been grinding 7 days a week. I just want a break. And I think, yeah, there was a point last year where I was just kind of over the season, but there was so much excitement because Arizona was winning and people were interested in the team. So that's what was able to keep me locked in. I think that might be a better question for my predecessor, Michael Lev, who covered Arizona football during the middle of the 20-game losing streak. Now, I covered the team then, but I was not the beat writer. Having to come up with stories every single week outside of, is this going to be the week that they snap the losing streak? That is a very daunting task, and I don't envy my guy Lev one bit regarding that.
He had COVID too then.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And it was like this perfect storm of how are we going to get through this? We're an empty stadium. The team stinks. Coach is going to get fired, or coach doesn't care, in my opinion. But, you know, where are you going to go from here? And how have you found Brennan so far?
I love Brent Brennan. I think he is a very charming guy. I think that he is just a relatable person, a guy who appreciates his players and allows his guys to, you know, have the spotlight. And he understands that this is Noah Fafita, Tetero McMillan's team, Jacob Bondu, Jonah Savianea. But he's also very, you know, thankful that those guys gave him a chance. And I think it says a lot about a guy that in just 2 days, he can convince arguably the best quarterback receiver tandem in college football to stay, because they all came to play for Jed Fish. They wanted to be a part of the rebuild. But then, you know, there was a moment where they realized, well, yeah, Jed was a really good coach. The staff that they had here, they were all great. But what made the season so special last year was the players. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to stay, and Brent Brennan had an open locker or an open door policy and allowed the players to come in and talk to him and, you know, pick his brain. And like I said, the fact that in just 2 days, he can convince the nucleus of guys to stay together and stay at Arizona when they were facing millions of dollars in NIL money. I'm talking about Noah Fafita and T-Mac. It says a lot about the guy. And, you know, Brent Brennan, when he was at San Jose State, would do a lot of fundraising for himself and the program. Mm-hmm. He would, you know, often pay for meals of the player, or the meals that were given to the San Jose State players. And so people are going to look at the record at San Jose, and like, oh, well, he's got a losing record. Well, yeah, if you want to use that logic, Jed Fish had a losing record at Arizona. You have to really look at how they built the program and how they won. And to win seven games of back-to-back seasons at San Jose State, it's pretty hard. You know, the resources, it's completely different. You know, you talk to Kwali Conley, the running back transfer from San Jose, Sam Olsen. I mean, we haven't had a chance to talk to him, but like, you know, some of the other, you know, San Jose State players that came over, they will tell you, man, the resources here is just next level. The amount of coaches here is just next level. So for Brent Brennan to have that kind of success at a program like San Jose State, I think it says a lot about him as a coach. But every player that I've talked to that played for Brent Brennan or coach that has coached under him, they always praise how great of a person he is. And he's a very genuine guy, a guy that you want to play for. And, you know, good news for Arizona is that this guy ain't leaving anytime soon. You know, we always knew that Jed would take another job somewhere else. I think Brent Brennan, for him, it's either fired or retire at Arizona. There's no other way around it.
That's interesting. The amount of NIL in Tucson, you know, Jim Click's name is always out there. There's a few people whose names are always out there around money floating around Tucson. Some of it is money that's from U of A boosters, donors up here in the Valley. It's really become a statewide deal, in my humble opinion. What have you seen from the NIL number? I'll just give you a quick story. I'm at an event that Brennan spoke at up here, and he walks in. There's it's probably about 110, 20 boosters. Everybody's all excited. Some high school coaches of name were there. He walks in, they introduce him. He says, first of all, we need between about $13 and $16 million to compete. Very first thing. And so I like that. So I'm curious how the NIL component has worked from your view.
I think it's very new to Brent Brennan. And because at San Jose State, they didn't really have the NIL programs that you have down here. And so I think that the shaking hands and kissing babies and meeting with donors and boosters, that's a whole new ballgame to Brent Brennan. And he's still learning that aspect of it. But I think that the boosters down here in Tucson, they're really starting to care a lot about football. Like, basketball has a lot of money pouring into these players. But for football, you know, it was so interesting to see, you know, in the moment where no one knew what was going to happen with T-Mac and Noah. Are they going to transfer? Are they going to leave? And next thing you know, you see Humberto Lopez, longtime booster for Arizona, owner of HSL Properties. He looks like Paulie Walnuts from The Sopranos, but he moves like Tony. And
good line.
And he's just walking with, you know, Jonah Coleman, who ended up going to Washington, Noah and T-Mac and, you know, some other guys. And I found it very interesting when I went to a toy drive, I think it was, for the holidays or something like that. Or no, it was in January. It was just some random toy drive. And Noah and T-Mac were there signing autographs. And, you know, Humberto said, hey, guys, come on back here. And they went back to their office. And that's the richest man of Tucson, arguably. I don't know what was discussed, you know, what kind of NIL deals, you know, Noah Fifita and T-Mac are getting, but it was just so interesting to see, you know, a man who's been, for the most part, donating a lot of money to basketball, step up and be like, I want a role in saving our football program, essentially. And whatever I can do to provide for these guys, I will do. And, you know, they were going to, you know, give Jed Fish as part of his contract, they were going to, you know, donate a lot of money to the boosters. And they kind of were disrespected by Jed leaving. And they said, well, all the money that we were planning on giving to you for your contract, we're going to do our best to have these guys set up with NIL. And so you're seeing Noah Fifita in commercials. You know, I'm not sure what's going on with T-Mac, but the NIL aspect is, you know, it's not what you see at other Power Four programs, but it's certainly not the worst. And I think Arizona, they have a lot to be proud of. And I think NIL is a big, big part in keeping some of these guys here, but not as big as some people would make it out to be, because, you know, Noah Fifita and T-Mac, like I said, were facing millions of dollars to go to Alabama or Ohio State, and they decided to stay here. Money isn't everything for these guys. And I think it's cool that they're going to stick it out and see it, you know, see this season all the way through and finish out their Arizona careers here.
A couple other things, I'll get you out of here. Ranked 21st in the first AP poll. Is that about what you were expecting, higher, lower?
That's about right. I think that with, you know, so much uncertainty on the offense and defensive line, Arizona being number 21 is perfect. If Jed was still here and they had those defensive linemen like Bill Norton, offensive linemen, you know, still there, and there wasn't so much shuffling around, I think Arizona would be a bona fide top 15 team. I really do. But with a lot of question marks, especially up front, I think number 21 is about right. But the thing about Arizona, they have a pretty high ceiling too. And with the expanded college football playoff and with a very favorable schedule, you know, if you look at their schedule right now, they only have two ranked opponents. That can change over the course of the season, as we all know, but they got Kansas State and Utah in the first half of the season. Those are the only two ranked opponents. So they have a really good team, really good nucleus of players, a very favorable schedule. Arizona is number 21, but I think their ceiling could be, you know, sniffing the CFP. We'll see.
I would agree with you. I just wrote something today. I did a three dots today on K-State is 17, U of A is 21. Yeah, K-State's got to go to Tulane in week two. But both teams should be 2-0 meeting in that game in Manhattan. And it's going to be, you know, the winner of that one will be in the top 12, 13, somewhere in that range, I would think.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that is a big one. What are you going to be doing 10 years from now?
Oh, man. You sound like my therapist, Brad.
Sometimes.
So, I mean, what I want to be doing 10 years from now is...
What will you be doing? What, not what you want. What will you be doing?
I'll have...
Definitive.
I'll have a beautiful wife, some kids right around here. I want to be a family man. You know, my career is very important to me, but family is also very important to me too. So somewhere down the road in the next 10 years, would love to have, you know, wife and some kids. And I just want to be doing this exact job, maybe at a different place or maybe still here, because journalism is always changing. And the job industry in journalism, I mean, it's just so hard to find jobs. So I love what I'm doing. I think it's, you know, I have a really good community of people here. So I wouldn't mind sticking around in Tucson, Arizona, but I also wouldn't mind being the beat writer for my Chargers. I would love to go in the NFL and cover the Chargers at some point.
Jeez. Well, that's a good one. It's a good one. You can do it. Don't want to be... You don't want to replace Hanson when he's done. If Greg's ever done. I don't know.
There's only one Greg Hanson. I could never. Those are big shoes to fill.
That's true. No, that's true. One other thing about Justin, and I saw him in action with his personal side a couple weeks ago. He had his golf tournament. His mom was there checking us in. His brother was there. Justin was there. It was all for a great cause. And so he's already giving back. Where did that come from? Parents instill it in you? I mean, dude, you're doing things that I usually see people in their 40s and 50s scratching their head thinking about. You're already doing it.
So, unfortunately, I'm a COVID golfer. Sorry, guys. I know I'm kind of late to the game, but yeah. You know, golf became a very big part of my life. It was really instrumental in my mental health. And, you know, getting through the pandemic, that was a struggle, as you know. And golf had a big part in that. And my brother has always been a golfer. And so he came up to me with the idea. He's like, we should organize a golf tournament, do something cool and raise money, whether it's for an animal hospital or children's hospital or something. And so we came up with the idea of the Spear Summer Classic. We had it last year for the first time, had it back for year two, had more people, yourself included. Thank you again for coming down and being a part of our event. And it was such a great time. We had a lot of great people. I'm glad that you and Lucas Haversick were able to chop it up after his workout with the Detroit Lions.
That was fun.
And so, yeah, we just wanted to do something cool, make an impact in this world, and use the game of golf to do it, because golf is pretty cool.
That is awesome. He's done it for 2 years. He's got a third year in him, 10th year in him. That is great that you're doing that. It's really good to chop it up with you because I think you do great work. And when you see somebody who's out there banging away on it every day with a sledgehammer, it's nice to find out their story and the people that are around them. Thanks for the time and best of luck this year.
Brad, you're the man. Thank you as always.
Justin Spears, and we're back with more after this timeout.